I met you at a party, spilled a Diet Coke and Bacardi. When you saw me all up on your dark jeans, should've known it was a game you were starting, Mario Karting. 18 months of innocence, saw the text you sent to him, razor scooter to my shins, should've seen it coming. All my friends fucking hate you.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host Mark, joined by co-host Jeff.
Hey there, Marky Mark. How you doing?
What's going on?
Chilling, watching movies.
Chilling,
really
watching movies.
Really interested to talk about this week's movie. I had a good time. But
okay. Well, before we get into what we watched this week, we got to plug some music. And this month, January 2024, we give a big shout out to the indie pop rock band The Wildlife, and that's the WLDLFE.
No vowels. Except for E.
Except E. And E's are only for babies. So,
yeah.
They're from Indianapolis, Indiana, and they're doing big things, making the rounds. So hit the show notes if you're listening on all your favorite streaming platforms. Get the links to all their social media accounts. Give them a like, follow, subscribe. If you're following or watching along on YouTube, click the little more button and all the stuff will pop up and you can give them a follow and a like and subscribe there. So
he's a professional.
What happened?
So you're a professional.
I am a professional.
Click the more button, like some sort more of person who knows what's happening.
Listen, I spent a lot of my time on the YouTube lately.
I spend it on another tube, but a bump.
Does that tube still exist?
I don't know.
There's the hub didn't buy it?
The hub is still around. I think it's just all the same content. So,
right. It's just.
But this is where you come for fresh content that you can't find anywhere else.
Anyways, Jeff, what's our theme this month?
Our theme this month, hold on, let me refresh my mind, is movies directed and starring. So the actor
directed and starring
the director
same actor
of the film is acting in the film in at least supporting actor capacity. Right? Cameos
correct
don't count. And so me being me, I picked an old movie. I don't have it in front of me though.
It's called The War of the Roses.
Well, yeah, The War of the Roses, but I can't remember the year and all that. But
1989.
There you go. Stars Michael Douglas and God bless America.
Danny DeVito,
who
the reason why we watched it.
Right, but what's I blame
Kathleen Turner.
Thank you, Kathleen Turner.
God, are you a professional?
No, not at all. Not at all. Dang. Okay. Of the Roses. There we go.
It's an hour and 56 minutes, which thank you for selecting something that lasted no longer than 2 hours.
Well, yeah, I think it's the sweet spot, right? Like, if it goes much longer than that, you better have picked a banger, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, for any type of movie to get my seal of approval for longer than 2 hours, it's got to be a banger.
Right.
I don't have
a lot of time for some bullshit. Which is why I groan when you pick long movies. But so far, I mean, the longest movie we watched was RRR. And
yeah. That's our top movie from last 2023. It's
maybe the best movie we've ever watched, full stop.
Yeah,
but that could change this week. Now.
Yes.
Do you have any relationship whatsoever with War of the Roses?
Never. You picked it, and I was like, I've never heard of that fucking movie. Albeit, I am not a... I'm 80s born and bred, but I am not an 80s film watcher.
I had a discussion about that because I don't remember how it came up. I think it's because I was watching War of the Roses and again, really enjoyed it. Spoilers. But I was talking to her about how you don't like old movies. And she's like, why doesn't he like old movies? I'm like, I don't know. Something about there being just so much new movies. Why would you watch old ones? And she's like, but there's so many old movies. Why would you watch new ones? I'm like, that's my logic.
But there's so many bad old movies.
There's so many bad new movies.
No, right.
Some of the worst movies we watched are newer than this old shit I pick.
You know, that's not a bad point. But, no, my
I mean,
whole
honestly,
thing...
Honestly, the movies that at the end of the year are the worst ones are newer, right? Sils Maria, yeah. Nine, and then, of course, the correct. Fountain are newer pieces of shit.
Yeah, but my whole thing for not enjoying older movies is that filmmaking is not... technology has made filmmaking more palatable, right?
It's
made films more palatable.
Disagree. And especially like the CG versus practical effects. Like if you listen
we've had that discussion.
Yeah. Like practical effects just seem to be more right. timeless. But we don't need to go down this. It's a well-trodden road for us. Which is good because I pick old ass shit you would never watch. You pick new ass shit I would never watch. And a lot of times it works out and then sometimes it doesn't. And that's okay. I'm really curious if it worked out for you because I texted you and I said, this might be the greatest movie I've ever watched, which is obviously hyperbole. But I also messaged from chronologically, I was like, because I think Eric would like this movie. I was like, Eric, have you seen War of the Roses?
And he's like, of course he has, right?
Yeah, he had, but he's like, it's been so long, I don't remember it. I'm like, I love this.
Because that's an old man, dude. Eric's an old man.
He's
seen
than
old
me,
shit.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, this is like, it was like an instant classic moment. Like you watch, you've seen movies before where you watch it the first time. You're like, this is going to be one of my favorite movies for the rest of my life.
Really?
Yeah. I really connected with this.
All right. So I'm interested and we'll get into it of like what necessarily did it for you with this film. But before we start with that, you know, I'm a Michael Douglas fan. What was it? Erotic Thriller Month last year. We had two of his films, right?
Two of them, right? We did Disclosure and Basic Instinct, both of which we enjoyed.
Right. We both recommended those films. I've seen, probably half of his filmography, I would say.
I've seen a lot, too. I've been a big fan for a long time. Like, I went to go see Perfect Murder in the theater. I was, like, 18 when that came out. And that's not really a movie I would think an 18-year-old would go see. But I just liked Michael Douglas movies.
Yeah, I mean, he's... In the 80s, he was kind of the Matthew McConaughey of...
I think that's a fair comparison. He doesn't quite have the charm.
Right.
Like, he definitely comes across a lot more unlikable. Like, he tends to play those... unlikable rich guys. So you think of like Wall Street.
Yeah. But he was super popular in the 80s. And he seems to be in everything in the 80s. And so there's a lot of blind spots for me with Michael Douglas.
Oh, Michael Douglas month, baby. Put it on the
especially
on the list.
His early stuff. But we could have done this. We could have done R-rated Christmas movies with War of the Roses.
So this doesn't qualify. Like we got into a discussion on that, even though there are a handful of Christmas scenes, but you and I are of the mind where it needs to actually be Christmas. Like it needs to be a major part of the story. And it's like, you could set Die Hard at any time of year and it'd still be a pretty kick-ass movie.
Right.
Whereas like movies that are about Christmas need to be at Christmas. So this Christmas is part of it. I thought that too when the first Christmas scene came up. I'm like, hey, we could do this. But, I'm glad
all
we
right.
saved it for now.
So
now, let me tell you my history real quick.
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
So I'd never seen this movie. However, the final climax, that final event with the chandelier, mm-hmm. was in my memory somehow. I don't know if I walked by while my parents were watching this.
And you had never seen it before,
to
your recollection.
I've never watched the film. I'd seen the cover art, and I was like, and I just never went around to watch it because I honestly thought, that looks boring. Like, I know it was about a couple getting a divorce, and there's the picture of them in bed with DeVito smoking, and it just... kind of looked pretentious to me. And so as it came out in 89, so I'd have been 9. And I just was like, nah, I'm not going to watch it. And then when I started getting into Michael Douglas films and like going to see Perfect Murder and just enjoying his work, I just never went back around to this. And so that's why we were watching this movie came back across my radar when I searched erotic thrillers, which I don't think this qualifies as.
No, absolutely not.
It is certainly a thriller. There are like one or two erotic scenes, but it's not like Basic Instinct.
Right.
But I looked at it, I said, this is going on my list. I got to think of a way to get this back in. And then you suggest, let's do movies starring and directed by. And I was like, perfect. So this was the first movie that came to mind because I'm like, I'm finally going to watch War of the Roses.
Yes, that's, I mean, it had, I'd never heard of it. And it's not anything because it's like,
it's because it's old.
It's not only because it was old, it's because, like, I'm not a huge Dan DeVito fan. but
that hurts me a little bit.
Well, I mean, Dan DeVito's fine. I haven't gone out of my way to watch a number of his films. And
you've seen Twins.
I have seen Twins, yes.
Okay. I mean, like, the ones that I think of that you got to watch is Twins. And then, I guess, just Twins. I mean, Batman Returns. And there's some others. I would put this on the list now, because mostly just because it's great.
No, so Dan DeVito in this film is superb, actually. He's the narrator.
So let's get into that.
Yeah, the story is told through Danny DeVito's eyes.
Which is ridiculous. Like, I'll tell you, like, when I started liking this movie was actually kind of right away. So, like, the opening credits, it's sweeping over this white linen, and it turns out to be a handkerchief.
It's very 80s.
I think it's older than
it
80s.
Might be, yeah.
It's
yeah.
a style, like, the font, that opening. The thing that I loved about this movie, and I feel like it was deliberate on Danny DeVito's part, was it really paid homage to, like, the 50s and that black mm-hmm. and white era of filmmaking. So many of the shots are so dramatic and gorgeous.
The camera movement in this movie is pretty phenomenal.
Right.
For it being an 89 film, the camera
sweeping shot when they first get into their house and it sweeps around them. And it's just really creative. It's not too in your face. There's the one where she's coming home on Christmas Day and the camera goes up above the roof and you see through the skylight and it like cuts through the window sometimes. It's just really fun. But then there's these lighting things. There's a lot of moments where Kathleen Turner's face is shrouded in darkness. And then there's times where just her eyes are lit. And it really reminded me of Psycho. A lot of that cinematography was there. And like the way the camera moves up the stairs and all of that felt right out of, again, that 50s and 60s era of filmmaking. And there, I was rewatching the movie today because I liked it so much. And there's the scene when she's telling him, I want a divorce, and you can't see her face. She's laid down. Her face is covered in shadow. And then she sits up and you see it and she turns. It's like, I want a divorce. Like, so much of this movie to me is beautiful to look at. Like, it's just a great looking movie. That paired with some bat shit stuff, it really sang to me. My type of shit. I loved it.
Well, I really enjoyed the fact that, like, DeVito didn't write this, but
no, it's based on a novel, and then it was adapted by Michael Leese, and I think the novel was written by Warren Adler.
Yeah, but the film, or the story, makes the house the bad guy.
It's the crux.
The house. Yes, the house is the reason why they're both in this kind of battle.
Because the house is basically what they're fighting over, and if it weren't for that,
right,
it would be maybe they not would not an be amicable together. Divorce, but
right.
the divorce...
They would not be together.
Right.
And I love the fact that this house is almost larger than life, and DeVito's way of shooting it, like there's several top down shots that he does, but one of them is he's coming, the camera's coming down, I think it's in the living room or the maybe the staircase, I don't know, I don't remember. But he's coming down, and it just makes the house seem like it's 10 stories tall.
Yeah.
And it just, it's such a great way to paint the setting for this movie, is because, yeah, we have these, all these characters, and yeah, it's about divorce, but the movie's really about the house and what's happening inside the house. And later on in the movie, towards the end, where the housekeeper, Susan, goes to like kind of check on everybody, and the camera shows Kathleen Turner like up on the third story or in the attic or wherever she's
like
at.
In the attic at that point. Yeah.
And but like the it's shot where her face is behind almost like a prison, right?
Yeah.
It's behind bars, and then the camera pans to Michael Douglas's face like two rooms over. And his face is like it's a prison behind bars. And I just thought it was really great. This film, the movie, regardless of the story and the characters and the acting and all that, the movie is fantastically shot.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised by that, is because I don't think I've seen another movie that Danny DeVito's directed.
He's directed Throw Mama from the Train.
Yeah,
there was another big one I can't remember. Because after watching this, I immediately went to his filmography. He directed Matilda. Did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay.
It very much pleasantly surprised me by how well this was shot. And when a movie has great cinematography or great camera action, it does something else to the film, to where other like kind of lull moments or not great parts of the film, where you can tolerate those, is because you're caught by the dramatic movement of the camera. And here he does it throughout the film, and I just thought it was really good, and it really caught me by surprise, and so pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah, I agree. And that, and to be honest, that's what my initial, I think I'm gonna love this, was just that scene in his office. And you know, he starts smoking and talking about, you know, that sort of stuff. And out in the background, outside his window, is this skyline. And it's not a city skyline. I think like D.C. or something's
it's DC,
in the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but it just felt vintage. Like you could tell that wasn't really the skyline. It was like a matte painting or something. But it keeps changing because essentially he's telling this story to a client. He's a divorce attorney telling it to a client, and throughout the whole film. Now, a couple things. Did you recognize the guy? He's credited as the man in the chair.
No.
That was in The Office. That is Dan Castellaneta. I said his name wrong, but most notably known as the voice of Homer Simpson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Doesn't say one word in the whole movie, and he's credited as man in the chair.
That's pretty awesome.
You'll never forget him. He's a very memorable face. You get one of the greatest voice actors of all time. He doesn't say anything. Simpsons was around in 89, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
So I appreciated that, but I found it so ridiculous. And again, I like this, but in a worse movie, it would be sort of something I'd roll my eyes at. Is they cut back at various points in the story back to DeVito, and you're reminded, oh yeah, this poor guy is sitting here hearing about some people he's never met.
And he will never meet.
Right. And you could tell, because every time they cut back, you look out the window and it's changed. Like you can see it's dusk and, you know, and then it's nighttime. And so many, many hours have passed while he tells the story to Homer Simpson. And I found that so ridiculous. But like I said, everything else surrounding it is so good that I didn't care, and I found it sort of appealing.
So we have to mention Romancing the Stone, right?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Romancing the Stone?
I know.
Wow. Hey, put that on your list for draft then.
Who's
that's? Oh, well, you can't.
Right. Because
it's a rom-com, though.
Eric about it. I'm like, you got to watch. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll watch that with the wife. She loves Romancing the Stone. I'm like, okay, I guess I need to look this up. I've never seen it. I know it's a popular movie. I am going to watch it at some point. Might even put it in the back of the brain to bring up during Michael Douglas month. in March, maybe? I don't know.
So, you know, Dan DeVito, Kathleen Turner, Michael Douglas all star in Romancing the Stone. So I thought it was interesting, the chemistry in this film, because I think Romancing the Stone was like 83, 84. This is 89 film. But so much, and Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas have really ridiculous chemistry in this film. It's so ridiculous.
Which movie do they have chemistry in?
This one, War of the Roses. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's because I don't really like Michael Douglas's character in this film.
He's a douchebag, but he's not. Well, I love this movie because I don't know whose side I'm on.
Right. Who is the worst person in this film? We don't know.
I found myself.
Kathleen Turner is the worst person in this film, by the way.
I think she's driven there, right? Like, she's responsible for
her own
actions.
Yeah, but she goes above and beyond.
At one point, she tries to murder him.
Yes.
Right.
Like, so she purposely drives over him.
That's probably true. However, there are a lot of moments in the breakdown of their relationship where I'm like, Michael Douglas isn't paying enough attention. Right?
Oh, sure. No,
and
he kind of minimizes
he's
at fault
her
here.
In, yeah. Like, her career aspirations, you know, like, once they buy the house, he goes to work. Hey, you got the fun part. Do the house. I got to go to work, which I didn't mind. I mean, he bought her dream house. So, yeah, he's got to take his ass to work. But
and he even mentions it in the movie. He's like, it's easy to spend money. It's hard to make money.
Right.
I get that. I get where he's coming from.
One of the things I love about this is it's only like 3 or 4 real scenes of setting up their relationship. And it does a really good job to me, like, because I bought into their early romance when she, you know, they meet at that auction and have this sort of what could have been a one night stand, and they're really into each other, and they just, there's so many great moments in this movie. Holy shit. So, like, they cut to the house later, and you can see time has passed. The movie doesn't tell you it has, but now Michael Douglas has a mustache, and they have these two kids. And then she feeds them candy. He's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And she talks about, no. I read that you give them candy. That way they're not obsessed with it, because when later on they'll get obese if they get obsessed with it. You cut to the next time jump. Two chubby kids come out. Rolling, like,
right,
this
right.
movie is funny. Like, I think one of the reasons I avoided it for so long, I felt like it was going to be really dark, and it is. I mean, it is dark, but
oh yeah, I
it's
mean,
like
there's
a dark
several
comedy
moments.
Almost, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I love it.
PETA probably had a field day with this movie.
For what? They didn't.
They didn't actually kill animals,
right?
But,
they die off screen, but
right. And but like, I thought the, like, Danny DeVito's choices behind the characteristics of these two characters and how they're depicted on screen, like Kathleen Turner's character drives this humongous SUV. She's loud. She's loud, and
yeah,
she's tall, and she's an imposing figure on screen, right? Michael Douglas drives a very old, small, you know, very luxury automobile, and he's very proud of it.
Which I think can also represent his maybe old school mentality of her staying home and taking care of the kids and all of that.
But the dynamic in that is so, I mean, it's so well done, is because it fits their character and how it's depicted on screen. Like, Kathleen Turner jumps in this thing and she tries to murder him.
So I was rewatching it, and then I missed it the first time where she said, oh, I traded in the Volvo and got the thing with the big tires. I don't know why, but I remember hearing it, but not registering. And then later on in the movie, when she's driving it, you're like, for some reason, it didn't click with me that that was the vehicle of her choice until my second viewing. I'm like, oh, shit. She loves these big ass trucks. Like, it's so cool of the character to me. I find her so interesting of a person.
How tall is she? She's a bigger lady.
She even talks about she was a gymnast, and then her body.
And there's several. I don't know if they're intentionally funny, but they made me laugh out loud.
They are
where they're going back and forth up on the second floor, and he Michael Douglas knocks her to the ground, and she does the jump up from her back.
She does cartwheels down the stairs.
That's the other one. That was what made me laugh out loud.
I said, this might be it. This might be the best movie because she cartwheeled down the stairs and I couldn't keep it. It was so funny. And yet they set it up with the whole gymnast thing. They bring it up just enough, right? They don't throw it in your face, but you know she was a gymnast. And then when she does the cartwheels down the stairs and gracefully ends at the bottom, just to later have Michael Douglas sliding down the stairs with that crazy camera angle. And again, that reminded me of Psycho. and just wonderful. I have nothing but positive things to say.
Google says that Kathleen Turner is only 5'8", but she is very imposing in this film.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the way it's shot, but... I'm watching this film. I'm like, damn, this lady's badass. But she's kind of an evil badass.
So that's where I get kind of the first half of the movie, before they really get vicious. Yeah. I'm kind of on her side a little, right?
Sure.
She wants to do. You know, the kids are grown, and so now she's trying to find her place in the world. And she realizes she has this passion for cooking and she starts a catering business. And he kind of is almost dismissive.
He is. He's dismissive of what she wants to do.
Go ahead, do it. Like, it's not even supportive. You know, I think a proper response, maybe a better response would be, that's great, honey. What do you need from me? You don't get that. It's more of a just what do I need to do to get you to leave me alone?
No, but I get, for the fear of sounding chauvinistic here, but the movie makes me resonate with that is because he is providing everything, and so I get the fact that he's like, hey, go do these things.
But she's taking care of the kids so he can take his ass to work. I get that.
Well, I mean, he was going to take his ass to work regardless. That's what I'm saying, you know?
They didn't have to hire nannies or anything like that. She raised the kids. She took care of the house. She held up her end of the bargain, right? And my problem is that when she comes in, she's like, I got paid cash for doing this, and I forgot what that was like. I want to go back to work, and I think this is a great way to do it. And he rolls his eyes at her, even though throughout the film, we've seen her get nothing but compliments from her cooking in other scenes, right? They set that up along the way. So initially, I'm kind of like, he has no investment in her, right? And I think that's the sort of long, slow, they don't really start having noticeable problems until the kids move out. But they show you several scenes where the cracks are starting, right? And, you know, that initial one is tell the story about how we got the crystal. And he kind of interrupts her because it's taking too long, and that offends her, rightly so. You invited her to tell the story. Let her finish. To hell with your clients. And you kind of see that they playfully make up. But again, that's where it starts. And then the passive-aggressive stuff starts where she's leaving the appliances on and those sorts of things. I love the setup of she has this cat that she loves and he has this dog that he loves. And I didn't notice it again until the second viewing.
She hates the dog. He hates the cat.
Right. And he sees the cat. And he just, when she's not looking, he just picks the cat up and throws it. I didn't notice that the first time, but I did notice the whole liver thing where she's feeding livers to the cat and then pretend throwing it to the dog. Like, what a dumb dog.
Right.
I love all those payoffs, like all those setups and payoffs. Like, they, you know, when her cat gets killed, dog revenge is coming. And I wonder, spoilers if you haven't watched it, just go watch it. But they get to that scene at the end where she's like, what's the pate made of? Woof, woof. And I'm like, oh, shit. I didn't see it coming in that manner. And but they cut to the dog. And I think that that was added in maybe by like a studio note. We're like, you can't kill a dog. Like, cats are fine. You can kill cats. Oh, we don't kill dogs. And they added that in because maybe eating dog was a step too far for the studio.
That'd be funny if they actually did that. I don't know, but
the rest of the movie is so mean and vicious that it actually kind of felt out of place for the movie to be like, relax, the dog's okay.
Yeah, because no, you're right.
Nothing else does that.
It did. But like this, the second that he starts looking for the dog and can't find it, I was like, oh, she fucking killed that dog. But
again, that's like, the other point. And the dog's just outside, and it's a night shot, just like when the dog was outside when the cat got killed.
Right.
So I really think they just added that in from some already, you know, rolled scenes.
You know, but like when, and he didn't purposely kill the cat.
No.
You know, the cat got outside, the dog chased him, the cat got back, you know, run over by the car as he was backing out of the driveway. I thought, like, I was like, why is he trying to cover it up? Go tell her that he accidentally ran over the cat.
But then he makes it worse, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't going to go well anyway.
No.
Because they were already really at odds. They were sleeping in separate beds at that point.
But so he doesn't want to give her the house. She doesn't want to give up the house. So
I think she's completely reasonable, though. Right? Like, because she's not going to have to pay alimony.
He paid for it. It's his house. I don't get the whole thing of I found it, you know? It's like,
but
bro,
she invested
so
much time in it. That's the thing.
I paid for it. It's my house.
I don't think.
I literally paid money that I made.
Okay,
I made.
But when you're married.
Sure.
My money is your money. That's how that works.
Right. But also, if the wife is not working, doesn't provide the same way that
you're talking
the
about
husband
financial
does.
Provision.
Financial, yes,
but
correct.
That's not everything.
But that's what it comes down to when you get divorced. Is like, hey, what possessions do it? And that's the thing.
But
that's
they
why
got this
over
as,
it.
As a couple. So she's there waiting tables all the time, helping pay those bills while he's in school, trying to get his work done. And she's helping support him. All of his success, she's part of that. So I don't, and maybe it is too much to say, hey, just take the house. I'd be able to stomach that argument. But the argument that because he's the one who financially ponied up the dough is not good enough for me, because they got married knowing that was going to be the dynamic. She's at home taking care of the house, raising the kids, and he's the businessman in that sort of nuclear family dynamic. I still think that she has a stock in it, and legally she does. You know, like the thing that DeVito tries to get them to do is just sell the house and split it, you know?
Right.
Because she has a take in that. She's been part of it so long.
And that's why, you know, the film goes back and forth like it does, is because they both have equal stakes in this, right? He feels like the house is his because he paid, he physically made the money
and
paid for it. And so he feels like, yes, it's my house. I paid for it.
He does not
give
care. Honestly.
Give it to me.
No. I think
No. He doesn't want her to have it.
Initially, I think there's like this the spite thing, right? He's still mad about the fact that she wants this divorce anyway. And you find out through watching it that he's still in love with her. He doesn't really want the divorce. And in a lot of ways, I feel like it's him holding on. I don't think he gives two shits about the house.
He cares about winning.
He wants the house. That's true.
No, he cares. Right? He cares about winning, right? You know, he doesn't want to give it to her because if he did, he would have lost this battle. And
he would have lost his wife. At the end of the day, that's what he's more worried about. And even though he doesn't know how to show it, and he's emotional, like it's. That's why I like this movie. It feels real. Like, all of this feels real.
I hear what you're saying, and the movie shows it, because in the final scene, where I don't even think that they died, but the movie makes you believe they died, you know, his last act is, like, reaching over you know, touching her and her smacking his hand away she died.
Because I wanted that, right? I'm watching that scene, and he puts his hand on her. I'm like, this character would bat his hand away. She doesn't fucking need him, and she does it. And I'm like, the movie is true to the characters to the last. Loved it.
But the fact that he goes around in the final act of the movie, and he just starts nailing everything to the fucking windows, right?
He's out of control, to be honest.
Right, he nails the kitchen table.
She is consistent. Like, she has made up her mind.
Well, I think he's pretty consistent, how psychotic he is.
He goes from, like, when he's mad and he's pissed and he hits the China doll thing and it gets in her eye.
He fucking pisses on some fish while she's trying to have this dinner party.
To me,
he's crazy.
Until that point, that was the one to me where I'm like, that's too far. Because even though you don't like that we're getting this divorce, he shouldn't be fucking with her business, right? Like, that to me is...
Bro, don't do your business in my house.
It's not just his house.
Don't do your business in my house. But that's what he's feeling, right? That's the way he's feeling. Don't do your business in my house, and you won't have me fucking with your business.
Is trying to now get everything off the ground for her to have her own money, and all those years she supported him and being this hugely successful attorney, being a partner in this firm that, you know, all that time she supported him, here she is trying to start this business. And he didn't try to support her at the beginning, right? Have you read my contract yet? No. I gave it to you a week ago. You know, there's no equal support. And he has, in a lot of ways, that old school mentality of, I think, just to be fair, you're expressing it to a degree that you just owe me these things because I make the money.
That's the mentality.
Yes, I agree.
Not the mentality. It's the mentality.
It is a mentality. No. But I think it is unfair of how he treats her. And I think this movie ends differently if when she comes upstairs and says, hey, I bought this big ass, badass monster truck. And if he, you know, goes, okay, you know, and they have maybe even have a conversation about, I don't mind you having that. What I have a problem with is you not talking with me about it. Let's communicate. And then she goes into, hey, I want to start a catering business. And he says, great. How do I help? And then supports her in the same way. I think there's an unevenness in their relationship that happens pretty early on that when you let it go and you let it fester, turns into this.
I think the movie's dynamic is that he loves harder than she does.
I disagree.
Right? The movie paints it this way. He loves harder than she does, but she's more calculated. And
no, so like the early relationship. So she, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But no, I mean, but he, we see that early on, he's kind of he's the initiator in a lot of their early romance.
Yeah, but then she, and again, it really comes down to that scene when she comes home and she undoubtedly is invested in him. She's a waitress, doesn't make a lot of money, and yet she's been saving her money to buy him his dream car, you know? And that to me is such a great romantic gesture that I think he never returns. And I think
he buys her the house.
That's fair. That is fair. That's a fair point.
He buys her the house. So he, I mean, but throughout the film, it's consistent that he's very much in love with her. Right or wrong, you know, right. how he's going about it. The film is consistent in showing that he cares at least physically for her. And I how he goes about it is completely deranged and all that.
Yes.
But at the end of the film, and they're both the both the characters are consistent throughout, but I just thought it was a fitting end to both characters, that his last act is trying to touch her, and
I
her
agree.
Last act is swatting his hand
away from me.
You know, and but at the while they're going through this, I'm like, okay, man, he's kind of batshit crazy. And then I love the scene where he's in bed, and it's towards the end of the movie. He's in bed, and all of his fucking porcelain figurines
are right
surround
at the foot
him.
Of the bed. Yeah,
no, they're just all over his room, and because that's what that's the things he collected, right?
They collected together.
Like,
right,
porcelain dogs
them,
or some
actually.
Shit. Yeah, and so like. I felt that. I felt the realness of the relationship because of these things that the movie didn't show but alluded to that they invested in together. And so, you know, his devotion to that car that she bought him is really kind of the most endearing aspect of the movie, and encapsulates his emotion and his feelings towards her, is because he's devastated when she runs over that car. It's almost like the film metaphorically is saying, hey, this is done, and there's no coming back from it, right?
I think it was done when he was pissing on the food in the kitchen. I get that he was in the car. That is a great scene. But you talk about deranged, right? Up until he goes there and starts fucking with her business, going into her kitchen and pissing on her work, right? I think that, yeah, again, I keep bringing that parallel back to how she supported him while he went through school and did all his stuff so that he could make the money he does end up making. She was a big part of that. And he or she is trying to do the same thing, and he's literally pissing on it. And
sure.
To me is when she goes off the deep end. And yes, she shouldn't be trying to run him over with her car. But I think that if someone pissed on my dreams, I'd be real tempted to run them over.
Drives you to murder.
in heat of the moment, man.
The allegories in this film are very well done, and I that's what I very much enjoyed was the kind of the back and forth, the ping pong of sorts of, you know, hey, who's in the right here? You know,
nobody.
In one moment
they were both
you're,
wrong.
Right, yeah. Right. But like throughout the movie you're like, okay, I sympathize with Michael Douglas. And then the ping pong ball goes.
Yeah, I was much more on Kathleen Turner's
well,
side.
Right, I can tell. But you know, it was kind of a back and forth, you know, affair. And I love the fact that at the end of the movie you're still like, there was no good guy here.
No.
I really liked
human. I think that's the big thing too. Like, I've talked about how I don't like movies with just all bad people, but I felt like they did so much to establish the human side of things. And like you said, there are parts of both of them that you can relate to, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it work so well.
Yeah. The all right.
Chandelier.
I mean, what,
let's get into chandelier.
Okay, all right, let's go. Let's go. It's a weird scene because I don't think that chandelier would hold two people.
Screwing it. You know, well, she had loosened it, right?
Right, right, right. But then he says that the thing should hold 200 pounds each, and I'm like,
shooting out his ass there. Like, right. I'm fine. Excuse me. Sorry, hiccup. I'm fine with that because he's just talking out of his ass. Like, he's, again, trying to do what he normally does and comfort her. Look, honey, you know, he's still trying to win her back. And now those cords should be fine. And it's funny, too. Like, she's right a lot, right? Like, with the Christmas tree. Like, honey, it's a no, it's not a short, you know? And, you know, and then the house is almost on fire the next morning. And then with the chandelier, it's like, don't do that. It's going to pull you out. And here he goes, not listening. You know, he could have just gone and fucking got a ladder and it would have been fine. But instead, he does that. Now they're stuck. Hanging on the chandelier. To me, this finale is sort of iconic because, again, I walked by it or something. Like, it was in my memory somehow. So when we got to the chandelier moment, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I didn't know that that was this movie. But I was like, oh, my gosh. And it took me right back, and I can remember how this scene plays out and them crashing to the ground and just being like, what a great finale. What a great ending to this movie where their hatred for nobody wins. This is just an ugly situation and nobody wins.
Yeah, I just don't know if that fall would have killed him.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it is far enough that
The way it's shot, it makes it seem like they fell from fucking 10 stories.
Yeah, like realistically, it's like 2, right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
But if your head hits the ground, because there are people like that can die from that, because if your head hits the ground the right way, you'll be dead. I honestly, though, think they would have been injured and probably could have recovered. They might even be alive. You don't know that, right?
Right.
And
the film doesn't
let you think that they're. Well, they come in. So the housekeeper comes in. They're dead. But nobody checks for a pulse. Nobody looks if they're breathing. It's just like, yep, they're dead. Don't bother calling 911. This literally just happened, and there's nothing that can be done. So that was a bit silly.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't love the like kind of the ending where DeVito is like, hey, let this be a warning to you. You know, I thought
Dan Castellaneta walk out of the office. That, yeah, I could see is that being a problem. I was already taken away by the film.
Yeah.
So I was fine with it, but it was a little cringy.
It could have just ended with both of them lying dead, quotes, on the floor.
You crash it, and then the camera would cut, you know, go up as you see them there.
Yeah, another sweeping shot.
Hand over the shoulder thing, you do that, and then you just kind of start rolling credits over the scene, and then you silently see DeVito and the housekeeper come in, and you don't hear whether they say, oh, they're dead or not. You just don't know, and you kind of leave with that. But they had set it up, though. They have to kind of give a reason why he's telling this story to Homer Simpson. So,
right. Anything else on this one?
I know there's something I'm forgetting to talk about, but I mean,
we got a young Sean Astin,
right? Thank you. Yeah. Young Sean Astin pops in. I think this is 89. Was it 90? So this is like maybe
Goonies was what? 90.
Yeah. So he's like a teenager in this. And I'm trying to think of the other Sean Astin film we watched, which was Encino Man, but he's like probably in his 20s at that point.
Oh, The Goonies was 85, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he's only, I mean, he's probably, he must have been old for his age. I don't know.
No, he was probably like 12 or 13 in the Goonies.
Let's do some quick searching here.
We'll do some quick math. Sean Astin was born in 1971. And so 85, he would have been 14.
Okay. Yeah.
And in this film, he would have been what, 19, 20?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's about right.
Okay. That works. But yeah, it's fun to see a little Sean Astin. I really like the scene that he has with Michael Douglas, probably his only scene.
I do too.
Where he
it's a really good scene.
He's like fighting with his dad. I'm mad at you. You did this. And his dad's like, well, if it make you feel better, hit me. And then he just hugs his dad.
And he hugs him. Yeah.
Really good moment.
Scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really human
sure.
stuff. I think that the daughter could have got a little more.
The most we get out of her, she's fucking her boyfriend in the car and then sees her house on fire.
Good. Pretty good. I mean, she.
I thought it was Kathleen Turner at first.
She has a good. Yeah, like she's cheating on him. But she has a conversation with Kathleen Turner. And is like, what are you and dad going to do each other while we're gone? Like, they know that this shit is going to go south. But I guess that's it. I mean, I adored this movie and I could easily see it being in my top five come the end of the year. I love the cinematography. I love the acting. I love the characters. I love the silliness, this sort of like him pissing on the food to me was so crazy.
And I thought he was drunk, but he wasn't drunk.
He was pretending to be drunk. And it was like a different movie at that moment where I'm like, what is he doing? And then he sets the kitchen on fire and all this shit. And then the pate scene at the end is really good. Like them sitting at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And him again. Feeling
and they don't
moment.
Trust each other because like he hands her some wine that he's already opened and she's like and he's like, well, I hope it's not poison. She's like, well, I hope it's not poison.
Yeah. Really kind of a you almost feel like this moment where they might get back together and it's all on his side. You know, like they kind of realize, hey, we're being really dramatic. Maybe we can calm back down. But the house is just a thing they can't get past.
Right.
Yeah.
It's their prison. And that's what I enjoyed really the most was how DeVito uses the camera to paint this house as their prison. And everything goes on in this house and it appears on the outside that everything's fine. But what's going on inside is this war of the roses.
There's even that scene where they're sending the kids off to college and they both wave away like a happy couple and then go back inside and pretty much immediately start battling
start going
again.
After each other. Yeah.
Yeah. I know there's probably a scene I was meaning to talk about that I forgot about because I feel like this movie is so rich with just great scenes. And you said something about a lull. I found no lulls. Like I was on board. Like, It just kept ramping up, like, until this great finale where he's boarded the house up and she's in the attic trying to unscrew the chandelier to drop it on him. And I approve this message, and I wholeheartedly recommend War of the Roses and think that everyone should watch it. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend it, too, as I was pleasantly surprised. It is a back and forth movie. It's really well. Danny DeVito. I mean, I'm still kind of shocked about how great this film is from a directing standpoint. But you know, even though like I didn't really enjoy Michael Douglas's performance.
You said that last time.
Well, he's kind of just a kind of
like
a
Michael
one
Douglas.
I don't know if it's that I don't like him. It's just his acting to me is just very one note.
Kathleen Turner definitely runs circles around him in this movie.
Yes, yeah, for sure. But like, his emotional level in this movie is a bit. There's a lot there, but like, how he conveys his emotion in this movie, other than the pissing on the fish scene, and then like where she runs over his car, and then he's like really had it. Everything else is just kind of like, we're just going through the motions. But I do recommend it is because it's kind of a masterclass in how this film is shot. And I'm still astonished that Danny DeVito is the one that made this movie.
I'll say this. I wish I would have bought it instead of rented it. I want to own this
Did
movie.
You rent it?
Yeah. Oh, no. Where'd you
no,
watch
you
watched
it? It on Cinemax.
Oh, no, I didn't do that. I just rented it.
Oh, okay.
Because I think I maybe did the free preview or whatever, so.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. I happily
would spend $4 on it. You can probably buy it for, what, $8?
No, if it was $8, I would have just bought it. But I think like it was like 15 or something. Yeah, right now it's 16 change. But to me, that's still kind of worth it. Had I known I would liked it this much. Something that these companies need to do with their digital rentals. If I rent a movie, give me a discount equal to the rental price within the rental window.
Right.
I think that's just fair. Like it just, and I think it would encourage people to spend a little extra money. I don't know why they don't do it. It's fucking stupid. Because I would totally go now. I'm still within my rental window and just pay the additional $11 and have the movie forever.
Well, so it's draft night.
Yes.
And we're going into the romantic month of February.
5 week month, baby.
And it's a 5 week month
it
because
it might be 15 years before we have another 5 week February.
You know, on the 15th anniversary of the movie Draft House, you let me know. We get a five week February, and because it's a leap year this year, and so we decided that we were gonna kind of, you know, hit the nail
we
on the head.
We got a little weird with this one. Let's be honest.
We get a little weird, but it centers on romantic comedy.
Yeah, and you'll see when we get to week five, kind of why we did this. Like it all just kind of came together, and then we decided to make it fucking stupid and call it Adam Eve and Steve romantic comedies.
Well, we can't exclude folks, right? I mean, we're a
oh no, I wasn't.
We're a very welcoming podcast.
Yes, I'm fine with that. Even, my problem was like we just narrowed it down to it has to have an Adam, an Eve, or a Steve.
Well, it's better than an Adam or an Eve.
I agree for sure because I picked a movie with a Steve, which you know is coming because you told your wife, don't worry about the Steve Martin movies. Jeff's got it, which warms my heart that you know me that well.
So anyways, our theme this month or going into February 2024 is Adam, Eve, or Steve romantic comedies. So would you like to go first?
I think it's probably for the best. And so I'm going to lead with the one I know you're not going to pick. Let me. This is a Steve Martin film that I saw many years ago. I really liked it. It came out in 1984. It's rated R, runs for an hour and a half, and it stars Steve Martin, Charles Grodin, who is very familiar face to me, but I don't know from what. And Joyce Brothers is in it, and there's some other recognizable faces. But what matters is Steve Martin. That's my Steve. And we're going to watch The Lonely Guy from 1984.
The Lonely Guy.
I
never
really
heard of it.
Like The Lonely Guy. I went through a Steve Martin
phase. So you've seen it. Okay.
Oh, I love this movie. I went through a Steve Martin phase where I watched his really old shit, like, you know, The Jerk, The Man with Two Brains, which is fantastic. I toyed with that, but it's not really romantic enough. But I really like this movie. It's really kind of, it borders on slapstick a little with some of the humor. I really like it.
Okay. It's an hour 30, so I'm on board.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I'm going to go in a different direction. And I'm gonna go. I'm also gonna pick a Steve, all right. But it's Steve Carell, and it's a movie from 2012.
Is this Head and Pancakes?
Head and Pancakes? What?
No,
I don't know what that is.
It's movie Head and Pancakes.
Head and
Pancakes. It's with Juliette Binoche. I can't think of the real name. Steve in Real Life, something like that.
No. It's an hour 41.
Go look at the movie poster. Head and Pancakes.
But we're going to watch Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
I've not ever heard of this.
It's Steve Carell, Keira Knightley.
Oh.
And it centers around the world. World is going to end, and Steve Carell and Keira Knightley got to kind of have a romance. And it's from 2012, so it's kind of early Steve Carell. But I remember seeing like bits and pieces of it, but I don't think I've seen it all the way through. So we're gonna watch. That's my first pick.
I don't know. Maybe you should pick again, and then send me your list. I got movies I don't want to watch.
My second movie.
We're gonna break our own. We don't have to. I get two movies. You get two movies. Here, you go. We're gonna watch two of your movies in a row because I want your list.
All right. For my second pick, we're gonna watch the film, and it was an Oscar nominated story.
Ooh, this
from
might
2019.
Be the one that was on my list.
From 2019?
No.
Okay.
Never mind.
it stars an Adam.
Driver.
But Adam Driver, right?
I thought
and
it was
remember,
a
romantic
comedy. That motherfucker not funny.
So although, we're gonna watch. We're gonna watch Marriage Story.
No, that's not. I don't want to watch this.
You've never seen it. However, I have never seen it either.
Oh, God.
It's
not gonna
be built. Funny. It's billed as a romantic comedy.
It's billed as bullshit. All right. I know what I'm picking. Never mind. I'm done.
Why?
No, don't worry about it.
Bro, I'm watching the trailer right now. It looks funny as fuck.
Okay. Great, I guess. So what we're going to watch then is, fuck it. We're going to watch a movie starring...
No.
No, what?
No.
Starring Shelley Duvall, Daryl Hannah, and Steve Martin, as well as Fred Willard from 1987.
Fred Willard. All right, I'm on board.
We're going to watch Roxanne. Damn it. Let me tell you what else was on my list.
Okay.
What I was really leaning towards but decided not to do was Spanglish.
Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
But the other one was She's Out of My League, and mostly because...
What's her name?
Alice Eve.
Alice Eve. I have an Alice Eve one on my list, too, but it's Before We Go. Although I watched the trailer and I was like, I don't know if this is a comedy. It's got Chris Evans in it too.
Okay. Well, I guess it's just Steve Martin month for me. So now.
But the other films that were on my shortlist was the Steve Zahn romantic comedy.
I do like Steve Zahn.
Management, also starring Rachel.
McAdams.
Friends Rachel. No. Plays Rachel in Friends.
Oh, God.
Yeah, her.
She's the most famous one of them, and I can never... You did this last week, didn't you?
I don't... Did I?
Where you said her name, and then you're like, Rachel from Friends. Why can't I think of it?
Jennifer Aniston.
Thank you. God, it just goes... It's right. One of those names that disappears in my brain.
Steve Zahn, Jennifer Aniston. It was going to be Management. Crazy Stupid Love, Steve Carell.
Oh, great film. Love that.
Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone. All right. Before We Go, don't know if that's a comedy, but Alice Eve.
Sounds sad.
And Chris Evans. And that was it. Marriage Story and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. So what's our fifth film on Leap Year?
All right. So we're going to watch this film. It's a romantic a comedy starring Amy Adams. As well as Adam Scott. So we're doubling down on our Adams. And it is from 2010. It runs for $1.40 and is called Leap Year. Huh? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we did it.
See what we did there?
We did it. However, I just clicked on a Leap Year from 2010.
There's another one that came up.
and that looks much better than the one we
picked.
Looks
like it could have been on
the
a
poster.
Erotic thrillers month. So, let's see. So we decided.
Have you seen Leap Year?
No, I've known nothing about it. Didn't know it existed.
Okay. I think I saw it when it first came out, but
I'm an Adam Scott fan. I find him to be very funny.
I'm an Amy Adams fan.
Then we should be in good shape, right? Other than the Metacritic
Marriage
score.
Story?
No, I don't. Honestly, I really would never watch a Marriage Story on my own, but. I'm not going to
shit on that. That's what this podcast is for.
So a movie I do want to watch is actually Danny DeVito's next directorial outing called Hoffa, starring Jack Nicholson. I might go ahead and watch it because this is his very next movie. Granted, it was about 3 years later. So,
Danny DeVito chronologically?
I thought about it, but he has some really good shit. Like,
no, just the directed ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just his directed films. Be a short little season.
What it?
Be kind of like a special feature between your main seasons.
So let me see, because he's got a TV movie called The Ratings Game. Whatever the hell that is. He did a couple episodes of Amazing Story. So it'd be Throw Mama from the Train, which I've never seen. War of the Roses, which I've never seen. Hoffa, which I've never seen. Matilda, which I've never seen. Death to Smoochie, Duplex.
Death to Smoochie? He did Death to Smoochie?
He directed that.
Oh, that's a good one.
And that's it. A TV movie called Queen Bee. So he's only got 6 films. I guess that could be a short season in between our Stephen King things. Yeah. I get to watch War of the Roses again. It'd be a good idea.
Get Eric on board.
It won't take much.
I'll jump on for the Death to Smoochie episode because that's a banger of a film.
Yeah, we'll see what we can.
I didn't realize he. That's Robin Williams and what's his face?
Ed Norton.
Ed Norton. Yep.
Yep.
Anyways, once again, we want to give a shout out to the music this month. We appreciate The Wildlife, the Indianapolis, Indiana indie pop rock band with the song All My Friends. Be sure to hit the show notes. Give them a like, follow, subscribe. We appreciate them all month letting us use their music here on our podcast. Just support music, bros. These cats that every month, they're doing big things. They're the hardest working people in the business. The bands that are always on tour, those are the ones that work the hardest. But if you want to support the podcast, hit the subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube when it pops up so you don't miss any future content here on our podcast. And then hit the show notes so you get the links to all our social media accounts. We're at Movie Draft House. Give us a like, follow, subscribe there. And don't forget that the podcast releases weekly every Thursday on your favorite podcast streaming platform. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter or X, we should say X.
No, we should say Twitter.
Okay, yeah, it's still Twitter. It's still Twitter.
I'm Team Twitter.
Team Twitter. Hashtag Team Twitter. But if you want to follow him on Twitter and tell him, hey, man, Danny DeVito's got bangers. Bangers on bangers.
I agree. Although I've only seen one of them.
We've only watched one of them, but I know of another one that he's directed that I've seen. You can find him at Movie Draft House, Podcast by Jeff.
That's me. And if you want to get in touch with Mark and be like, hey, man, you're really going to get it from Jeff if Marriage Story isn't funny, you can do that on Twitter at I Heard You Liked. Because if that shit ain't funny, it's going to be hell or high water all over again.
Just watch the trailer. The trailer makes it look hilarious.
I've only seen the scene where he goes, I wake up every morning and I wish you were dead or some shit. I'm like, I don't want to watch this.
That Adam Driver saying that is unintentionally hilarious. It's because he's not a great actor, in my opinion.
I think he's a fantastic actor.
Everybody keeps telling me that he's a great actor. He's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, bro, have you seen his movies? So next week, new month, new theme. We're going to watch, what was your first one? The Steve Martin one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's run it down again for February.
Yeah. Okay. Run it down.
February 1st, we got Lonely Guy. Really looking forward to watching that this week. The next one is Seeking a Friend for the Apocalypse. Is that the full title?
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Let me update my list. Then we're going to watch Marriage Story. Can't wait to rip you a new asshole. Then we're going to watch Steve Martin again in Roxanne. I mean, I'm a simple man. I have simple taste. And then on Leap Day, we're going to watch Leap Year.
Leap Year.
Like
can't wait.
Some kind of geniuses.
Can't wait. And that episode is going to drop on February 29th.
And then March is Michael Douglas month. Well, we don't know. We haven't discussed it, but.
Anyways, we'll come up with something.
I'll put that there.
Jeff, any last words?
None. Actually, I do have. Don't waste your money buying fake dog shit when you can get the real thing for free.
All my friends fucking hate you. You left me for someone brand new. You like to hide behind your lies. They got my back, you don't got mine. Yeah, all my friends fucking hate you. And I think I hate you. Yo. 18 months of innocence. Coming, acting like you're heaven sent. I can't put up with your shit. You're the one name on my list. I wish I never did. All my friends fucking hate you. You left me for someone brand new. Yeah, you like to hide behind your lies. They got my back, you don't got mine. Yeah, all my friends fucking hate you.